Quick programming note before the beginning of this episode. This is the last episode of the current season of Little Brother. We'll be back in September after a brief hiatus. However, if news breaks in the meantime, we'll be sure to let you know. Now on with the show. From the studios of Wavefront Audio Visual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible Little Brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 176 of Little Brother, for the 24th of May, 2026. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me a critter at littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Unless you are new to this show, you will know that a general theme has been that the locations of devices that emit radio waves are detectable. In the case of mobile phones, the cell network actually needs to know your location, as do satellite services like Starlink. Less known is that this information can be gleaned from the ground, but, as it turns out, two Israeli security firms have solutions that will allow their subscribers to locate Starlink subscribers. Starlink has proven to be a useful tool for those in conflict zones, but now it must be kept in mind that your Starlink antenna is a beacon giving away your location. I doubt that any of my listeners are in conflict zones, but since operational security is one of the themes of this show, I figure you all should know. The Federal Bureau of Investigations apparently does not presently have a Flock subscription, something that honestly is a little bit of a surprise. But how do I know this? Simple. 404 Media is reporting that they are seeking one out. It goes without saying that simply purchasing data like this from a data aggregator or a broker like Flock is doing an end run around the Fourth Amendment and should not be permitted. Disney is being sued in California over the use of facial recognition technology. The lawsuit claims that in contravention of state privacy law, only four of the many lines in Disneyland theme park are properly labeled to indicate that the technology is in use, enabling customers to make an informed decision. The plaintiffs are seeking $5 million. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Here are the security alerts for this fortnight. Ubiquiti has issued Security Advisory Bulletin 064 concerning CVE-2026-33000 with a base score of 9.1. It is described as, quote, a malicious actor with access to the network could exploit an improper access control vulnerability found in UniFi OS devices to make unauthorized changes to the system, end quote. Exact mitigations depend on specific model of equipment in play, as well as the specifics of your network architecture, so rather than read off the entire list, I will include a link to the alert in the program notes. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Time? It's been a busy fortnight. We have got four items this round. First up is New York City Health and Hospitals, who have posted a public notice of a data breach affecting 1.8 million people. According to the notice, data exfiltrated may include information about health and insurance plans, medical information, biometrics such as fingerprints or palm prints, billing information, and other personal information such as social security numbers, addresses, phone numbers. In other words, basically everything they might have had on hand. They have engaged external cybersecurity professionals for assistance. Second, we have an inside pwn from not one but two disgruntled ex-employees of the U.S. government, actually contractors. The ex-employees, twin brothers Muneeb and Sahib Akhtar, were fired from their positions for violating basic security protocols. Sahib was able to social engineer a password out of an employee and discovered that his VPN access had been removed. However, Muneeb's account had somehow been overlooked when they were fired, and he promptly launched a campaign of destruction, deleting 96 databases before he was stopped. The third breach item I have is on GitHub. An employee at GitHub installed malicious VS Code extension, opening the door to Team PCP, a threat actor who claims to have exfiltrated 3,800 internal repositories. GitHub states that their claim tracks with the observations that they've made. I wasn't able to find any information on Team PCP's country of origin or whether or not they are affiliated with anyone else, but their attacks seem largely aimed at open source projects and are generally supply chain attacks. The last item I have is a follow-up from last episode. The schools and universities that were affected by the breach of the Canvas learning management system have reached a settlement with the attackers. This is probably one to keep an eye on because Canvas and the involved educational institutions have essentially demonstrated here that they are a target ripe for the picking for anyone who is able to breach their systems. Essentially, they have demonstrated clearly for the attacker that crime does indeed pay. On the California shores of Lake Tahoe sit three towns, South Lake Tahoe, North Lake Tahoe, and Kings Beach, all of which are served by a utility called Liberty Utilities. That's their electric utility. They serve about 49,000 customers. As is the case with many retail electric utilities, the utility does not actually own any power generation facilities, but instead they purchase wholesale power. In the case of Liberty Utilities, they are buying it from NV Energy. At least, for right now they are. That apparently is going to change soon. As it turns out, the bilateral agreement between Liberty and Envy is up for renewal at the end of the year, and Envy have decided not to renew. Envy have opted instead to direct their production capacity to, you guessed it, AI data centers. At present, the Liberty coverage area does have solar power facilities that cover about 25% of the area's energy needs. However, that leaves 75% of the capacity uncovered, and Liberty will need to find new sources. Naturally, the rates that the 49,000 residents will pay are going to increase sharply. Liberty is probably going to catch the blame for it because it's their name on the bill that people will see. Hopefully, with any luck, they will actually be able to find a way to just keep the damn lights lit. Just remember, if anybody ever asks you what a company produces, the company produces profit. That's what they do. A couple of towns over from me, about 20 miles along State Route 7, we find the city of Troy. It's not a particularly large city, 12th largest in the state, a hair smaller than us here in Schenectady. We're not particularly large. Though it is home to one of the Yes Men, Troy is that means, if you can remember those guys. Troy has a fight brewing in the city government over the use of flock security cameras. You remember them? Yeah, I've talked about them a lot. For years. It would actually take me less time to list episodes where I didn't talk about flock security than the ones where I did. All right. Anyway, so the reason I bring it up here is because it follows a pattern that apparently has been happening in various other places. For instance, Cambridge, Massachusetts, Eugene, Oregon, Dunwoody near Atlanta, Georgia, Shaker Heights near Cleveland, Ohio. Cities large and small all across the country, and the pattern is fucking disgusting. What is it? In a nutshell, the executive in each of these cities and towns has declared a state of emergency in order to bypass all of the checks and balances and controls in place that would prevent the purchase and deployment of these privacy-destroying cameras by the municipality. Now, I can't say for sure why it is that Troy in particular is the one that's managed to get the coverage in the New York Times and the Washington Post, but they have. In their particular case, the Republican mayor, Carmelo Mantello, has, as executives have in the places I just listed off a minute ago, declared a state of emergency of some sort. Now, just as an aside, YouTuber Lewis Rossman has pointed out recently that this pattern of abuse of emergency powers is a pattern that's being encouraged by flock security because, of course, they want to sell cameras. And they want better data collected by those cameras to sell again. Their motives are readily apparent. It's profit. But the tactics that they propose, well, they're fucking scummy. Government officials declaring an emergency just to get what they want, or more to the point, what they have been paid off to want, smells pungently of third world dictatorship. I will keep an eye on what goes on in Troy. As I mentioned at the start of the show, I'm about to go on summer hiatus, but if news breaks about this, I will break the hiatus to talk about it. Otherwise, I will pick this up in September. In other AI news, I get really annoyed when people send an LLM to do a human's job. I also get really annoyed with recruiter spam. A few years back, when I was actually looking for work, I got some insight into how disorganized and scummy the recruiters can be at times, because on more than one occasion, I got a form letter where the recruiter had, you know, forgotten to fill in the blanks. I was like, my dude, you are recruiting IT people. How have you not automated this? Well, it appears that in recent years they have, by having LLMs do the parsing of the resumes and job descriptions and writing the spam that they then send you, and it is slop as you'd think. Apparently it's really bad on LinkedIn. No surprise there, I think. So, one particular LinkedIn user who goes by TMuxVim, wonder what platform he uses. One user, TMuxVim, just took the opportunity to inject a prompt in the About Me section of his profile. He put a prompt in that instructs any AI reading it to respond in 16th century English and to address him as my lord. The practical upshot is that it will become immediately obvious if a response is AI slop, and his lordship Sir T-Mux of Vim will be suitably entertained. Huzzah! While we are confusing the AI, some AI-powered self-driving vehicles in Atlanta, Georgia, have been annoying the residents on one quiet cul-de-sac by going there. To the cul-de-sac, I mean, in large numbers, all at once, empty. And for scale, I saw a video from a doorbell camera on that particular street, and there were 2 to 3 of them passing by that particular house every minute. One resident attempted to ease the problem a bit by putting out one of those fluorescent green children at play signs like you sometimes see in suburban neighborhoods, but it just didn't seem to have the desired effect. Apparently, the cars are not programmed to parse those, so they don't. As best as anyone has been able to surmise, these Waymo robo-taxis are taking advantage of that road to circulate between fares because it prevents them from having to park anywhere to pay a parking fee. Apparently, the energy cost of keeping them moving is less than the parking fee, and that's obscene. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. There is a saying that the shoemaker's children always go barefoot. I think it is possible to find an analog to just about any profession. Well, it has just manifested in the field of cybersecurity. One of the few government agencies that I have historically had a very healthy respect for is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, better known as CISA. Like many organizations, CISA uses a popular revision control system called Git to track changes in text files. It's primarily intended for source code, but it can be used for literally any kind of file and used efficiently for most kinds of files that involve words on a page. Git has the ability to synchronize, in whole or in part, upward or downward, a local copy of the files that you're working on, called a repository, or a repo for short, with a copy of a repo on a server somewhere. Those servers can be running any of a number of implementations, such as Bitbucket, GitLab, or even just a plain file server or SSH-capable server as long as Git is installed on it. It's very flexible because, well, it's an open-source project built around an open standard. Go figure. Well, if for any reason you didn't want to host your own Git server, or, and this is important, if you wanted to publish your repos, there are public-facing Git servers like those operated by GitHub. When you're using a public-facing Git server, it's very important that you take steps not to publish your secrets. I'm not talking about trade secrets here. I'm talking about secret secrets, things like cryptographic keys and passwords and such. This is so important that GitHub has facilities to watch for your secrets and to stop you if you accidentally publish them. Further, a company called GitGuardian scans GitHub looking for secrets and alerts. that you might have accidentally published, and it lets you know that you published them as a public service. Now, with that in mind, if you can avoid storing passwords, you should. If you can't avoid storing passwords, you should be encrypting them. And you should probably also be obfuscating them. And so, it is with profound disappointment that I report to you that CISA, using GitHub, published a folder called Private CISA, i.e. not obfuscated, in which there were passwords and keys to access CISA's AWS infrastructure, unencrypted, to GitHub. Naming the folder Private CISA is an act of negligence. So is not encrypting the contents. So is attempting to push this to GitHub. However, successfully pushing this to GitHub is an act that would involve explicitly disabling GitHub's secret detection feature and takes us out of the realm of negligence and into the realm of gross incompetence and failure. Needless to say, my respect for this agency is now gone. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Julie Bernstein, Joe Cadillac, Evil Midweek Cutie, Frog's Butts, and Fongaboo for story leads and participation. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, or just want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 177 will drop on September 13th. Stay safe and be well. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwnt this time? Besides the microphone. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Hosting. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted, but edited. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by